Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RTE.ie, Miriam Owens has contacted us from Kerry. Miriam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and this beautiful day in Kerry.
Yeah, and beautiful day in Dublin, but even if it was raining in Kerry, it would still be a beautiful day, Miriam. Miriam, a very, very serious topic and issue has come up in the last few days, and many, many aspects of the verdict of the 48 people who were unlawfully killed in Artane. But you make the point, and it's obviously a foregone conclusion now, there's going to be a heartfelt state apology from the Taoiseach in the next few days to the Stardust families. But you say you grew up in Nazareth House in Tralee, and 25 years ago, almost to the day, 1999, in early May 1999, the Taoiseach Bertie Ahern gave you and the various people who had been through the industrial schools, or the orphanages, all run by religious orders, you got a state apology. What did it mean, Miriam?
At the time, Joe, I was in London, and it was actually Sky News. I heard it at first, and it was, he just stood there, and on behalf of the state and behalf of the church, he apologised for the atrocities that happened in all these institutions, reformatory schools in Ireland over decades, and for all the children that suffered in the hands of the state, as we were put in by the state with a court order to be looked after. And 25 years later, all the promises that was made at the time was never, ever fulfilled. Never. It was like, we got the apology now. Get on with your lives. We'll throw you a bit of money, and that should do you. But it wasn't, nothing got to do with money, Joe. This was something that they promised. They made so many promises to us, and we never, like what they're doing to the Stardust families, the horrific things. And then all these years later, now they're going to make a state apology to these people, the Madeleines. But this is the first. The industrial schools was the first apology made by the state. And it was a lot of the people like myself spent years in these places, right? But nothing was ever. We were promised, there'd be a memorial, there'd be this, there'd be that, you can have this. We're just, get over it, get on with it. And so for years, we have been trying to get something done. But now 25 years later, there will be something done on the 11th of May, 2024. Which is the exact date he stood.
And tell me what's been done, Miriam, 25 years later.
Well, the industrial school, Nazareth House, really is still standing. Now, it's been bought by Barivera for a very, they're going to do a wonderful work there, and that's lovely to see. But there was nothing there to state that it was an industrial school, and that the hundreds of people that passed through these doors, there was nothing to state that it was Nazareth House and a former industrial school. So for years we have been trying to put something there. And finally, not from any, the only, like, no help from, no funds from the government, even though there was 500,000 put aside in 2009. 500,000 for a memorial, a state one, and that never happened. And even to try and ask them for something that we can put up in Tralee for the industry, that's still standing. The convent is still there. Okay. The wee church is still there. And by the tree, it was impossible.
Okay, so what is being erected on 25 years later, as you say, after the apology?
What is being erected?
What's the wording of it?
A memorial is going to be erected by the tree where we've just outside the industrial school. There's a beautiful beech, copper beech tree. And I was up there this morning and just laid the plinth or the foundation for the memorial to go up on Saturday the 11th of May at 1 o'clock. And finally, and was I to go away, we got money. And it was the Diocese of Kerry gave me the money.
Mm-hmm.
We asked and to pay somebody and I appreciate that so much because.
Okay, and just a bit, Miriam, do you know what the exact wording will be on the, will it say this was?
I want to leave that for today, Joe, because it's going to be unveiled. But I will send it to you.
But you're happy with it. You're happy with the wording.
It's very amazing. Happy.
Okay, now you say the Diocese of Kerry is helping you financially.
Yeah, the bishop.
We go into the two big apologies. I know there've been other apologies by the state, but the two big apologies are 1999 for the industrial schools, and we talk about what they were like for people who've forgotten in a few minutes. But there was a redress scheme set up for people who were there, and there was a redress board, and people went along and they did what they went through. And so the state set aside 1.5 billion in compensation, so to speak. But the religious orders, not the diocese now, the religious orders who ran these institutions were supposed to pay half of that. And as you probably know, they have not paid half of it.
They have not paid. 110 million they handed over. And
there's a massive shortfall from the religious orders about they promised or they said. Now, some of them now disputed after late 18. They said, we never said we'd go 50-50, so to speak. So the state, the taxpayer, is paying out the vast majority of the compensation. Now, so that's on the one hand. So it is difficult. Now, I understand, I heard the Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Farrell, on this morning, on Morning Ireland, and he was obviously empathising with the Stardust victims, and he said they had been subject to victims and survivors. They had been subject, and family, they've been subject to systematic abuse. But I know the religious orders, their boss is in Rome. Their bosses, and they know. But like, it'd be interesting to hear the church speak out about the religious orders and what they've been doing for the last 25 years. Have they ever issued a full apology?
No. They never stood in front of us and said, we are sorry. I mean, if I did something wrong, and if anybody, I would stand up in front of that person and say, I'm sorry for what happened, or no matter what you did. But they can't even say the word sorry. We apologise for what happened to you, right? And even the government today, the only, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, a lot of people, Norma Foley, right? And she helped us massively for this to happen in Tralee, and rightly so.
Okay, now another apology was to the you mentioned earlier was what was known as the Magdalen Laundries, and that was another heartfelt apology by the Taoiseach. But the problem there was they got the apology, rightly so, but when it came to the redress scheme, and it's been advertised at the minute on radio. A significant number of people, men and women, as babies, were in those Magdalen Laundries, were born there. They've been excluded because they weren't there longer than 6 months. And on this programme 3 months ago,
which is absolutely the cruelty of that. Scandalous. Scandalous. Absolutely. You see, you know, my motto in life is treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
We all come into this world naked. We're going to leave this world with nothing, right? What happens in between, that's our life. But for them to stand there and turn around and deny us even to tell the truth, they say, you're liars. It's never, no way. You know, these were called the Sisters of Mercy, that where I was. They definitely didn't show us any mercy. And I'm not saying you can't harm everybody, but everybody knew, but nobody said nothing.
Yeah.
And it was the same. And for 25 years later, since the state apology, which was at the time wouldn't have had social media, it wouldn't have had the same state of fear started. Christina Buckley, we'll do this. When I went to Dublin, it was just, I wasn't a human being. I really wasn't treated. We don't want people like you coming up here.
Miriam, when you watch the relatives on television And you think of what they've been through for the last 40, 43 years. No one is getting any younger in that group.
No.
And you can see the pain is etched on their faces.
And Joe, so even some of the women and the boys that were in the industrial school can't even talk about it because they're not believed. And some people can't even talk to their families about it. It's like, forget about it, it's done, it's over with, get on with your lives. But it's only when you get older, and I mean, I've been trying for this for years, just to get something done. And all the promises that they make, this goes on deaf ears. I mean, we elect them as a TD to represent us. Councillors are represent, we vote for them. And I only vote for people that help me, right? Mm. And that's basically, I have no particular party. But I wrote so many emails, and I think I got about 3 back. Not an apology. I'm sorry to hear about this. And I want people on the 11th of May to stand there and say, well, this is done. And it's just the first one. Hopefully, every county should have one. But everything seems to be going. That 500,000 was taken away from the industrial school survivors. And there's people I know right now, they have nothing. They have nothing. And that's what hurts. They promised all these medical cards. We got nothing. All we got was a bit of money, and it's nothing. You can't buy us. We can buy. All we wanted was to be recognised as human beings, and you're not one of them. When I hear that, oh, you're one of them. That's really... I'm not a number anymore, Joe. No. We all have names.
And is there any is there any other memorials around the country to these institutions?
No, there is one. There is one in Tuam. There's, you know, the stones, and they have the little booties for the, because it's we're all kind of categorised under we're all put under the same umbrella now. They say, you know, but bear in mind, it's been 20. Nobody would, but I speak to young people. They said, we didn't know that because it's not spoken about. It's not spoken about, and the only way that.
And what age were you, Miriam? If you don't mind me, what age were you?
I was a baby, Joe. I was a baby.
Good God,
you didn't. I was a baby.
And why?
And my other two sisters went in, and my sister there, just my other sister died 6 weeks ago suddenly. For that to happen on the 11th of May, it's going to be very poignant for me. Mm. And for everybody that went through that, has, you know, and they can bring their families up and say, we're not going to be hidden anymore. Yeah. This was our home. And that's why every place should have something.
But explain to listeners the simple reason why you were put into Nazareth House, you and your sisters.
Well, we were put in because our mom got sick.
Yeah.
She had TB.
Good
and in 90, yeah, and at that time, people were in sanatoriums. They were put away. Mm, they were rejected, you know, because a bit like the COVID, don't go near them. And so, but I wouldn't have known at the time why we were put in. But mom was sick, and fathers weren't allowed to look after their children, and that was it. And then you went in. Your whole identity was taken. Your name was taken from you. Your personality was taken from you. Mm. They wouldn't let your hair grow. You were controlled. You from the day you walked in there, you did what you were told, and they had the power, and that was it. And I was there until I just reached before my 13th birthday. My number was 1,061. Everybody had a number.
Yeah.
And if they can turn around today and say that's not wrong, what happened to every person that went into these places. And that everybody can call you a number. We were born with a name, and we're still a human being. We're still Irish citizens. I was born, and I left home, and I was 21. I couldn't even live at home, Joe, because first of all, I missed my friends in the industry. You're there, you grow up with them. You think they're your sisters and brothers. Do you know? I didn't know no different. When I went to London, I felt I could be free because I didn't have to tell anybody who I was, where I grew up.
And a reminder to younger listeners, and I'm actually surprised even by the people I met at the weekend who hadn't been fully aware of the Stardust disaster and the because it was known in 1981 that the doors were chained. There was no
That's
doubt.
Correct.
I don't know why. But anyway, but unlawful killing, they had to wait 43 years to get that obvious verdict. But when people like yourself were put into these orphanages, it was through no fault of your own. How could you ever find a fault in a child? Or no fault of your mother's? And the state went to court and said...
And you were taken to a court. You were taken to be detained until you reached the age of 16. You got 16 years if you were a baby. Until you reached the age of 16 to be detained by the state in an industrial school, and the only crime in my eyes that they thought I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, children were dragged from their fathers, they were dragged, no matter what happened, they were taken. Just like babies were dragged from their mother's wombs and taken, fostered out, adopted out, brought into industrial schools. That will never go away. And the problem is, it should be in the history books. People should know about it, because when I do speak to young girls, 20, and boys, they said, "No, Mary, that couldn't have happened." In Tralee, I said, "Yes," and not only in Tralee, all over Ireland.
And people don't believe that. Well, they do, obviously. Of course, they believe you.
But they do. But
it's true. But they don't. They don't believe that you could be one. That one in an institution run by a religious order should be so badly beaten and punished for no, not that would ever be any reason justified, but for no reason.
Yes. And I mean, why should I and all the children that we had to watch and witness, that they think that we had to stand there and look and be strapped to a bed, beaten with straps, counted 100 times, put under the stairs, put into a dog. The cruelty that happened in these places, and it was all systematic. If every person, if you ask any person in industrial schools, mother, even the way they treated mother and baby homes, Madeline laundries, they were all treated just like these nuns and these religious, they took vow. They took a vow to look after and to do the work of supposed to be God, right? Well, my God, suffer little children, come on to me. My God, did we suffer? And after 25 years, that you finally can, I'm talking about Margaret that's with me, and especially want to thank Margaret, a former resident with me. We're doing it together, and Rebecca Wall, who did design it, and who did the design, but through us, the artist, and the gentleman that's doing the sculpture for us. Mm-hmm. I went up today, and the plinth is down, and I cried, Joe. I cried.
Okay.
And the beach, the copper beach, is blooming, and it was just wonderful to see it. That it's going to be placed there in 2 weeks' time, 2 weeks Saturday, and if just people can understand that we all have children now and grandchildren, that we can go there now and with them and say, look, this is where mommy and nanny grew up. And it's there forever, forever. I mean, every county, and for the price that it cost us, every county could have one, and it would cost them less than 100,000. So I don't know where the 500,000 is going to, but people should be given money that needs help.
Just to remind us, Miriam, you were only 18 months when you were sent, and it was known that stage to the Pembroke Arms Industrial School, later changed the name to Nazareth House. But did you mind me asking you about your ninth birthday and the little present you got from, because it was a day school as well. They'd be from the town, and they'd come in and out. And one of the other girls...
We were going to primary school, proper, you know, like, we went to normal school, Balloonook. It was just on the grounds, just walked down the path, and the school was there. And it was my ninth birthday, and I got a gift from, I'm going to give her first name, Cara.
Okay.
And she gave me a pair of mittens and a box of chocolates, and there was a girl on the swing. which would have been the first current. I mean, and my birthday was in November. That's what I was told, the 5th of November. And I went back to the school, to the orphanage, and I ran up to the nun, and I said, look, I'm after getting a present. And not only that, she called me a beggar, right? She gave the chocolates out, she tore up my mittens, and she beat the living daylights out of me. She said, you won't beg again. So that's, you couldn't, I mean, I was thought, I couldn't believe I got a present from a girl in school who I was great friends with. You know, they didn't victimise us, right? But in the school, the nuns did. Yeah. They wouldn't even call you by your name. We had our numbers tied to our back. And I was in 61. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe today that we're actually still here to tell the story.
And it happened. It happened in our lifetimes.
And you know, the last place to close was 1996.
Yeah.
And you think of that. It's just... It's not that long ago. And they think that you can forget about everything. When you have your children, it doesn't come into your head because you're overprotective now. And now when you've got the grandchildren, which I have two and three and one on the way, and I look at my 7-year-old granddaughter and I remember my Holy Communion, she's seven, and I'm going, my God, like, she's as free as a bird. That's what all children should be. Have not a care in the world.
Absolutely.
But I brought fear into my whole life. Fear of speaking up for myself or speaking, you know, I'm asking permission all the time to do stuff. It never leaves.
Yeah.
You know, is it okay if I do this? Well, why are you asking?
And Miriam, I know you're still a young, relatively young woman, did you ever think in your campaign for this memorial, 25 years after the state apology, did you ever think you'd see the day that the memorial would be erected beside that beautiful 300-year-old tree beside the school?
I did. Because I said I would never give up, and then only for the girls that helped me, and the just writing to people and showing up and saying, I'm not gone yet, you know, I'm still here, and we are going to get this done. We are going to get this done. And when they dissolved this memorial for the industrial schools, and when they said, you're not having it now, I got more determined then to say, right, they're not going to do this to us now.
Because the promise of a memorial was a recommendation going back 20 years.
2009,
now.
October, when Minister Pat O'Keefe announced that there was €500,000 put aside for a memorial, and then all of a sudden, that was 2009, 2014, was the apology for the Magdalenes, then the mother. Yeah. So now that we're put under... I don't mind. It doesn't matter. We all should be. Everybody should have some kind of recognition. But the problem is, they're saying all these big words, and you've got all these academics telling you, and we've lived it. Shouldn't it be the people that were in these places have the say? Not. It's people all over Ireland should stand together and say, on the 11th of May 2024, that 25 years, a quarter of a century. I mean, I became a pensioner last October.
Yeah. And so you're still relatively young, and next Saturday fortnight. What would you advise the Stardust families, Miriam?
I'd exactly the same, but for them to wait. But don't let it go. They say they make all these promises, but I guarantee to you, for somebody that's witnessed this and been through it, when the solicitors got involved, it went out the window. And they had all these advertising campaigns. Oh, we will look after you. We'll do this. And when you go there, they won't even... It's a P.O. box number Cara Nua had. They wouldn't give you the address until I went up.
We covered it at the time,
Do you know?
And you're not a... Miriam, how come... Well, it's... But you just remember that number. What? 1061.
1061. And I tell you what, Joe.
It's incredible.
2 years ago, I went to Dublin. and it was the Arts Week in Dublin.
Yeah.
And there was three girls from Dublin and Rebecca Wall. They wanted to do something as for the arts.
Yeah.
And they rang me up and they said, what would you like? So I said, I'd love a stairs, because there's 13 steps on the stairs. And because I found out my 13th birthday that it was my real birthday, the 11th of October.
Yeah.
And I went up to Dublin that evening with my sister Breda. And I walked in and I saw the stairs that they made. Now, it was made out of the material from the industrial school. And one of the girls had sewn 1,061 stitches on the first step. Mm. And that was... And the whole steps of the stairs was my life.
That's what you...
And it was the most wonderful... Like, I stood there and I looked at it and I went, that is my life.
Yeah.
That is our life. In the stairs. In the normal stairs, there's 13 steps.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get up to the top. And they made it very difficult. But there's crews down the stairs many times.
Okay.
I mean, so they never wanted us to reach the top of anything. No, so just try to bury it. Bury everything. Bury the truth. Bury everything. And that's... But they're not.
Miriam, do you think there'll ever come a time... And when you're in the full of your health, and you will be for many years to come, please God, with your grandchildren and your grandchildren, do you ever think there will come a time in your life when you might be able to forget that number 1061?
Oh, yeah, I do. But you know, sometimes I say, what's your PPS number? And go, oh, God, here we go with a number again. And
no.
You know, that kind of, everything is a number now, reference number. And there's always, it's always there, you know? I know, obviously, my name is Miriam, and oh no, but we need a reference. But it will go, because my children know the story. My granddaughter will know, and my grandchild will eventually. But at least they can go up and see, that's where my nana was, and that's where my mum was. But with a lovely memorial.
And will they be with you on Saturday fortnight?
They won't, because they're in England. And Joe, it's perfect. It's absolutely, there's no problem. Once it's there, they can come over at any time and I go up with them, because they've never seen it. So they wouldn't go up. But now, when we're all together as a family, we will go up and you can go up there and look at it and stand there. And put little, anybody can go up there now. And it's away from the tree, because just in case the tree, but it's a permanent memorial.
Yeah,
around that.
Okay, Miriam, stay with us, because I'm going to talk to Paul, who's telling his story, not dissimilar from your own after this break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We were contacted by Miriam Owens, and she's relating the factor, pursuant to the fact that the state will issue another apology tomorrow, this time to the families, survivors, and indeed the victims who were unlawfully killed in the Stardust disaster in 1981. And Miriam points out that in 1999, almost 25 years ago, next Saturday fortnight, there was an apology from the then Taoiseach to the Irish citizens and beyond, who were sent to these orphanages, as they were known, industrial schools, in other words, through no fault of their own, by the way, through no fault. Maybe one of the parents was sick, or they didn't go to school or whatever. And then the most recent apology came, 3 years ago, and this was from the then tarnished Micheál Martin, and this was for... This was for the mother and baby homes, and a redress scheme was set up. First of all, it was a full apology, and we were told that everything that would follow would be in the spirit of that apology, but it hasn't been, as Paul O'Sullivan in Cork wants to point out. Paul, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. Before we start on my side of it, I'd just like to say to Miriam that she's a credit to everything that's good about this country.
Yeah.
And even with the best attempts to silence her, she's stuck with it, and she's a fantastic person, and hear, hear.
Okay. Well, what's your situation? Because
my situation, Joe, is basically I was on TV on February 29th. We discussed the mother and baby redress scheme, and it's up and running since March the 20th. And I filled in the form. I'm waiting for a reply through a solicitor to see will they grant me redress and will they give me a medical card, because that's part of the redress. But I hope I'm wrong, Joe. But the Stardust people have suffered enough, and I think myself that the redress is a photo op for the great and the good. That hopefully that they don't insult them, add insult to injury by giving a hollow apology like they gave to me and 24,000 people like me.
Because you know the people you were born in Shanross Abbey.
Yes,
its name is now etched into all our seared into all our. Are born into all our collective memories.
Yes.
But you're not eligible for this scheme. Why not?
I'm not eligible, Joe, because Mr. O'Gorman, the Minister for Children, who's a topical about his house being picketed at the moment, is topical at the moment. He's in the headlines. His department formed a redress scheme that said if you were 179 days in situ in the mother and baby home, you get nothing. If you're 180 days, you get compensation. And it's nothing to do with money, Joe. It's got to do with discrimination. The 180 days was taken under advisement, apparently. But only last week, Joe, last month, I did physio on my lower back. I have a lower back problem. And the physio, when she reviewed old x-rays, asked me, she said, my injuries were consistent with a child who had been double nappied.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand that, it's done in places where the staff are having the time to look after children properly.
Yeah.
So I said I couldn't tell you that because I didn't know my younger history, or my people are dead now. That's the question too. It was all kept quiet anyway. So from there, I've got a government minister saying the first 6 months of my life are irrelevant because it didn't affect me.
Well, in fairness, not just the minister, it's the government that decided that. Can't be the action of one person, but it is a government decision to exclude. So basically, this scheme, which is advertised, I heard the ad today.
Yes.
There's a. I think it doesn't use the phrase terms and conditions, but there are terms and conditions. And one of the terms and conditions is if your mother, in your case, Paul, or your mother's family or friends managed to get her and you out of Shanross and the horror that was Shanross, if they managed to get you out of Shanross before you were 6 months old, that's hard luck on you. You've no hand, act or part, and you can't even apply for any help.
Yes, and also, Joe, there's a second part of it. There's two more things. If you do accept the redress, you must sign a disclaimer that you will not go after them for more. Also, if the public apology was given by the Taoiseach in 2021, and if your mother had died before the apology was given, you're entitled to nothing. If she's died after the apology, then the family can claim the redress.
And remember as well, as you will, Paul, and Miriam will, of course, that when the redress scheme was set up for Miriam, for people like Miriam who had been put into these orphanages and industrial schools, when the redress board was set up, part of the setup was that you would not reveal how much you got. There was a non-disclosure.
Right.
And if you did reveal, and thankfully many of the people came on Liveline and broke it immediately, deliberately, if you did reveal what the redress was, you could have been criminalised. You could have been brought to court. It's shocking. Stay there, Paul. Finola Shanahan, you're remembering Miriam, and as I say, Miriam tells that gorgeous story on the one hand of the girl she knew in the day school, Cara. Was it Cara, I think her name was?
Cara.
Say again, Miriam?
Cara.
Cara.
And, Cara,
And she's the one who gave you the little present, and the nun basically said to you, you are getting uppity, how dare you? You probably begged for that present and she better live in daylight, so you, and destroy the present. Finola, you remember the
I do.
Yes.
I mean, I'm from Tralee. I live in Tralee. I'm sure Miriam was either in my class maybe or the class maybe ahead of me. I'm not sure in Ballinasloe. But I, as a child, I have a vivid recollection of them coming down the avenue and skimpy little, you know, clothing, and a cold, wet morning, right? And we didn't understand. We were farmers' daughters, my sister and I, going into the school. We actually didn't understand the significance of this, right? And they were segregated. They were like different people, and as Miriam said, the hair was cut the same. And another recollection I have was they used to get, I think, bread and butter and milk at about 11 o'clock in the morning, and they were kind of taken away. Honest to God, they were second-class citizens. They really were treated. And in the classroom, the nuns could do what they liked with them because they had no recourse. They had nowhere to go, whereas we went home in the evening. Yeah, but we didn't understand the significance of it as children.
And who, Finola, what was your understanding of who those other girls were?
No, we never, I suppose, we didn't consider it. We thought that they don't have families and they're minded by the nuns. I mean, we didn't, and it was never, well, it wasn't discussed at home. But what I do know is the monastery, which is where the boys were kept, was across the road.
Yeah.
And in the summer, I remember as a child, two of the lads coming out to work for my father, who was an absolute gentleman, right? And they ploughed the wrong field for my father.
Yeah.
And they were afraid to tell him. But when my father said, we can plough that one next year.
Exactly.
It made no difference. We'd go in there, they used to fix shoes and they do leather things, and their heads were all down like little beavers, right? They were afraid to nearly look up, Joe. There was such fear in them. Like, you could sense that. But I suppose, I mean, I'm in my 60s now. So, like, we didn't realise until years later what it was all about, because it was just never talked about.
Yeah.
Now, one of those girls actually used to come out to our house at weekends because she was great friends with my sister, who was older at school, right? And unfortunately, that girl was in maternal death afterwards. But I have vivid memories of it and how they were treated in the classes by the nuns.
Well, the memorial has been unveiled. Miriam will be there on Saturday fortnight.
Amazing to keep that up.
Yeah, incredible. Okay, Finola, good evening. We've got us, Finola Shanahan. Alice, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
The whole idea of this state apology, what was your situation, Alice?
Well, I had never spoken about it, and actually I'm a bit nervous now, so I hope you understand.
Yeah, of course.
When Bertie Ahern apologised in 1999, I was really naive, and I thought long and hard about opening that Pandora box.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a home, Linden, because my mother was ill. She was also in a mother and baby home.
Linden and Blackrock in Dublin.
In Chumra. Yeah, I was in Blackrock with my brothers. And I'd never told anybody what went on. I never discussed it. I just locked it away. And I believed that the apology was that maybe it's time to deal with what went on.
Okay.
And the late Christian Buckley was really kind to me. And she put me in touch with various listeners and stuff like that. And then what happened was the redress list was, this was what was sold to me. That, you know, this would be better for you emotionally, you know, people be on the redress.
Mm-hmm.
It would save going to court, all of that kind of carry on.
Okay.
And it wasn't on the first list.
Linden and wasn't named.
No, and then the second list, there was a promise of it definitely be on the second list.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't on that. And then effectively, it was just abandoned and thrown under the bus. So what it did to me was, I don't know how to explain it, was kind of to this day that you one never got received justice, or that your name was never, you know, recognised as being somebody that was in a home and that received some sort of acknowledgement. So the apology to me, for me personally, was a disaster, because I would never have opened up that Pandora box, and I can't close it, and I've never been able to close it, you know. And it's also makes me understand why my mother was constantly sick, because she was born on the Navan Road, and her whole life then was going to various orphanages.
And when you say the Navan Road, what you mean is she was born in St. Vincent's?
The mother and baby home.
On the Navan Road, now gone. It's now where Kempton.
Yeah, but I never
Kempton
knew that, because she never spoke about it. She just spent most of her life in and out of Grange Gorman. God love her. And we knew nothing, you know, and her crying for her mother constantly haunts me to this day. And that's really difficult for me to talk about. I've never told anybody, spoken to anybody about it. But I now understand, and I understand how it is so important for survivors of neglect and abuse to have a genuine, and I admire the people that are, you know, are having plaques or whatever. But for somebody like me, there was hundreds of us. There was a boy section and a girl section, and yet it didn't exist. So I don't know what else to say about it.
And I know Lyndon, because Lyndon was quite well known. Lyndon Nursing Home, as it subsequently became, is where Eamon De Valera...
Yeah, convalescent home.
Convalescent, that's where he lived out his days. But at the time, I think the Minister of Education said Lyndon was not allowed into the redress scheme because it didn't want... It basically said it was not allowed because it wasn't allowed. It said it was refused on the basis that it did not come within the terms of Section 4 I don't have Section 4.
There was no teachers in there paid by the state, you know.
Okay.
And actually, I found documentation to prove otherwise. But you need deep pockets and on your own.
And Alice,
can
I ask you exactly? You would, and yeah. Not just deep pockets, Alice. You need
deep
enormous support. Exactly. Alice, how long you were in there for, and how long your mother was?
I was there twice, you know, because unfortunately my mother, you know, because we didn't know. Kids were never told anything, you know, just my mother wasn't well. And I remember the first time I was there, and then the second time knowing exactly what I was going to face, even though I was only six. I will never forget it as long as that. I will bring that to my grave, because I knew going up those steps what it meant, and the horror. I'm quite upset. The horror of it, the actual horror of the and the neglect, and what it does. You know, my brother's never. You know, my little brother was only two. Mm. He was put in the boys' section, and he was moved then to the girls. He's passed away now. He's gone. Mm. Two of my brothers that were there are gone, but. I could hear him screaming. Still, have nightmares about it. He was two, the most beautiful little boy, but he was in the girls' section because he was too young.
Yeah.
And so, for that to be denied, Joe, you know, for it not to be recognised, this is not about money, and you hear this all the time. It's not about money. It's about justice. It's about the acknowledgement, you know, that.
And when you were in Lyndon. In Blackrock and Dublin, was your mother there, or where was your mother at? Where was she?
She was in Grange Gorman.
She was in Grange,
as I realise now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or St. Lomans, because my dad, Lord of Mercy, he would bring us. He only had one day off work, and actually they charged. The nuns were very decent. They charged my father, for to mind us, you know, look after us. We were on the documentation that I got from them. And we were all sick. We all had some sort of sickness, which nobody had, you know. But he would collect us on a Sunday and bring us to visit our mother in St. Lomans. Now I know what it is, but I didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
So she used to just cry because we were so neglected and skinny and all of those things. You know, she was a good person. But just extremely damaged.
Yeah. And did you know, Alice, did you know at that time what the cause of her pain and her illness was in terms of her mental state? Did you know the cause of it?
I believe, you know, sort of that I think abuse of the extreme abuse. I think that her being torn from her mother, because that seemed to have been a big issue with her.
Of course, crying
for her mother constantly.
And did Alice, what age were you, can you recall, when you heard your mother crying for her mother?
I would have been very young. Very young, hearing her crying nonstop.
Yeah. How could you ever forget that?
Never.
Hear your mother, your own mother who you love, crying for her mother.
Yeah, yes. It is quite, you know.
So painful.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I'm not understanding because, as I say, you know, sort of thing, my children would know the story. And in fact, I'm applying on behalf of my late mother to the mother and baby home.
Okay.
Because I want them to know her name.
Brilliant.
I want them to recognise her name. She existed.
Yeah.
And a life of mental torture to herself.
Yeah.
Because she was born, as she said once, that because she was born out of wedlock, which is even when you say it sounds disgusting, you know, that you were less than as a human being. Less than. That was a big thing for her, you know, that, you know, less than, and all her life she was less than.
And that pain just never stops travelling. It never stops travelling. And I stay with us, Joe at RT.ie.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
William Owens contacted us, and in light of all the discussion about the apology tomorrow on behalf of the state to the families, survivors, and indeed the victims, God rest them, who were unlawfully killed in the Stardust. And Miriam pointed out that we're coming up, it's next Saturday, fortnight, May the 11th, the same day, by the way, appropriately, as Darkness into Light. But on that day in Tralee, there will be a memorial unveiled. That's 25 years to the day after the state issued its apology to people who were put into those orphanages and industrial schools. Gabrielle O'Gorman. Gabrielle, good afternoon. You're listening to Alice, you're listening to Miriam. You were in the Dáil for Enda Kenny's apology for the Magdalen laundries.
Yes, I was, Pat. Yeah.
Joe. Yeah, no matter. And what was that like? What did the apology mean to you, Gabrielle?
At that time, Joe, I was over from England and there was quite a few different groups of survivors up there.
Yeah.
And we knew it was coming, but when it happened, I think the biggest relief for us was that suddenly somebody believed us.
Okay.
And it was very emotional, and that's what I remember.
And does the apology, again, I don't even think this is a measurement that you can use in your situation, but I'm lost for words in one sense. Did the apology make you feel any better, Gabrielle?
Only a little bit, because suddenly people were listening to our story. But before that, as Miriam said, we felt like we were nothing. Nobody cared about us. We were the forgotten people.
And you were born, it's been mentioned already, in St. Patrick's on the Navan Road. It's where Kempton Estate is now. It was a mother and baby home. And do you know what happened to you after that, Gabrielle? Where did you live?
Yeah, what happened after that? I had 4 years in the mother and baby home.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went on to Stillorgan till I was 12. Then I went on
That's St. Mary's in Stillorgan.
Correct. And I was 16. The day after my 16th birthday, I was sent to England because my mother was living there.
Okay.
And they got me a living-in job looking after children.
Yeah.
So that's where I stayed. But really, truly, Joe, I was delighted to get out of Ireland because we never thought we had a place here. I never felt a belonging. But since I've come back, I've met with all my mother's family.
Brilliant.
And it has been wonderful, and
Brilliant.
Other relatives. So I do come back quite a lot. And I've been sitting here listening to Miriam, who I know as well. And I say well done to her for the memorial and for everything she's done for the survivors. It's been wonderful.
But I know you are surprised. Well, maybe you're not surprised. Shocked, maybe, the fact that the memorial that Miriam's involved in and is being unveiled on May the 11th, it's 25 years to the day after the state issued an apology. A quarter of a century.
I know. I can't believe it, Joe. I mean, I think all of the survivors, we've all been through a roller coaster, just, you know, emotionally. Mm-hmm. But at least now, if it's going to be done, we're really happy with that.
Yeah. And when did you come back? I know, I presume you were released on your 16th birthday. Isn't that what they do, Gabrielle?
I was released from Lakeland, but then I was sent straight over to my mother, over to the convent in London.
She was in a convent in London?
No, my mother was living with her husband. She's married. Then I went straight to the convent. This is how they did it. Okay. And I had living in, looking after 35 children for 1 year. And then I came back to Dublin. My mother brought me back. Mm-hmm. And somehow I went back to the nuns. And then they put me back into the Magdalene Laundry. And that's where I spent 2.5 years down in Limerick. And it was hell on earth, Joe. It was awful, but at least I did escape from Sean McDermott Street, and then I was brought back by the police. Mm-hmm. And then sent down to Limerick. And then in the end, the nuns had enough of me. They wanted me to go. So then that way I got back to England, and I probably at one point didn't never want to come back to Ireland.
Yeah.
Because I felt it was like the shame you felt you weren't wanted or didn't fit in. So I was kind of happy, but now I've turned the corner. I do love coming back now. Yeah. Because I think Ireland's a different place.
Yeah, yeah. And you found some of your mother's family.
I found my family, yeah. And it's been wonderful. But remember, my family didn't know about it because my mother kept the secret. She couldn't tell them, like many other mothers.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And Gabrielle, okay, you on your 16th birthday, out the door, go to England. But how did you end up back in the Magdalene Laundry then?
And my mother brought me back here just for a holiday because I think her father had died. And I think the family then heard about that and my mother had a baby.
Okay.
So I used to go out with this boy that she didn't like. And, you know, I was now 17 and feeling quite free. And she did say to the nuns, oh, you know, do what you like with her. So I stayed out one night, and the nuns then just put me in Sean McDermott Street, where I escaped from after, I think, I don't know, a couple of weeks. And then I was brought back by the police.
And the building in Sean McDermott Street is still there, and it's been cited as the site for this memorial that's been in the making for the last quarter of a century. But how did the police catch you? You weren't a criminal. I know they...
If I go back, how the police called us, the girl that I ran away with, we went to her auntie, and her auntie knew the nuns.
Yeah.
And they immediately, she rang the police, and the police came and took us back to Sean McDermott Street.
Oh,
and the next day, I was taking them by taxi all the way down to Limerick. And I never heard from anybody for 2.5 years.
Oh, my God.
I was down there, and I had to fight for the nuns to get out. You couldn't get out. We used to go on hunger strike, everything. I refused to work for them. I never did the laundry for them. So in the end, they put me into the lace department, making the Limerick gloves.
The lace, okay.
And that kind of calmed me down a bit. So... And then eventually they let me go. But they did tell me that I would never be welcome back again because I think they knew I was a bit, you know, I was really, really rebellious and I was determined to get out. But it was very hard to get out there, Joe, because they had, there was glass on the walls.
Oh,
so you couldn't get out. There was no escape. Awful.
So you thought you had escaped at 16, but it was what age were you when you eventually escaped from the place in Kerry?
They let me out about 19 and a half. So really, I've wasted 2.5 years with them.
God.
2.5 years. And as soon as I got out, Joe, I decided I'm going to England. Because I always thought, you know, they'd get me back again. Because they had so much power, could do that.
And generally, what decade are we talking about, Gabrielle? Do you mind me asking?
I'm talking about probably late 50s, because I got released just after President Kennedy had been shot, 1962.
Yeah, 1963. So John F. Kennedy came to Ireland in June 1963. It was seen, looking back on it, as a big milestone in the development of the state, and all the great and the good were tripping over each other and they were showing off the best. But you were, when John F. Kennedy, if you got out when he was assassinated, which was 5 months later in that same year, you were imprisoned in this Magdalen Laundry in Kerry.
I know. No, I wasn't in Kerry. I was in Limerick, John.
Limerick, sorry, my mistake. You were imprisoned with glass on the walls to stop you escaping.
Yeah, couldn't get out. Honestly, nobody got out until eventually they let me go. And, you know, I have to tell you, the nun said to me, and they changed my name from Gabriel to Stella. And they said, Stella, as I was leaving, they got my case ready from 2.5 years ago. And she said, have you anything to say for yourself? And I thought, well, I'm glad to be getting out of here.
Okay.
And she said, remember, we don't ever want you back here. That's the kind of mentality, the psychology they used. And I thought, I'm gone. And as soon as I got back to Dublin, I headed over to England, away from them.
Say what is Gabrielle. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
On Friday's programme, we said it was a foregone conclusion that the state would apologise to the Stardust families. They had basically no choice. They were unlawfully killed. And the 48, and then the families were cruelly ignored year after year after year. And but anyway, things changed dramatically last Thursday afternoon, and that prompted Miriam Owens, who was the first caller you heard today, and she said she was part of a group that got a state apology just almost exactly 25 years ago from the then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, who's still involved in politics, as you know, and another heartfelt apology. And she said 25 years later, we will only get the memorial that we were promised in her home place, which is Tralee, in 2 weeks' time. And then you heard from very moving calls from Alice, from Paul. Alice talking about Lyndon, as it was known, a convalescent home in Blackrock in Dublin. She was put in there along with her two very young brothers because her mother was in Grange Garman, which, as you know, is a psychiatric hospital. And the reason she was in Grange Garman is that she too was in a mother and baby home and obviously had suffered. And Alice's description of her as an 8-year-old daughter listening at night to her mother crying in the next bedroom for her own mother was heartbreaking. And we also spoke to Fionnuala and Gabrielle, who we just heard before the break, searing story. I want to be fair in terms of time there. Serena, you were born in Offaly, St. Joseph's in Tullamore. And again,
that's correct.
This redress scheme, which is being advertised at the minute, Paul isn't happy with it. And he was born in Shanross. You're not happy. Are you happy with it, or what's happening?
No, Joe, I'm not one bit happy with it because I was born in the county home. I was there 6 months, a little over 6 months. But what my issue with the redress system is they're offering people like me, who were always identifiable, like me, an enhanced medical card.
Yeah.
Now, the only people in Ireland who will have an enhanced medical card are those who are either in mother and baby homes or county homes. Okay?
Yeah.
So you are genuinely identifiable.
Yeah.
I've argued this and they've said no, and they've almost said I should be quite happy with it. I don't need it. Through my own work, my own education, my own everything, because I'm like the other girl, the English girl ahead of me. I had to educate myself. Yeah. Gabrielle, I had to educate myself. I paid thousands to educate myself. I worked 45 years and I still get disrespect from the government that more than likely my tax money paid them for their education. And especially Roderick O'Gorman. But anyway,
he was the minister, but it was a government decision. But Serena, can I ask you, what do you think you about the fact that if... like Paul, if your mother managed to get you out of one of those, your family managed to get you out of those mother and baby homes before you were 6 months old, you were excluded from the redress scheme.
Yes, yes. And that is disgusting. And everyone knows, who has anything between their ears, that abandonment issues come from the day a child is born, even prior to that, because they know their mother. They know their mother.
And were you...
Go on.
Were you boarded out, Serena? That's the other awful thing that was happening.
Yeah, I was boarded out. So there is no redress for boarded out.
Yeah.
The local county council would have boarded you out into country areas.
Yeah. To work in many cases on farms.
To work on farms, that's what I did. Because I was from Offaly, I worked in the bogs. I cut turf, I stuck turf. I did all those things. I worked with the farmers and a small, underfed, miserable child. And that's how I lived my life. Joe, I am so angry with this country. I am so angry with the disrespect, not for just me, but for the disrespect for the people from the other day. I am so mad I can hardly talk, from the Stardust. The way they were treated, and it was because they were from a working class area. No other reason. Yeah. And that's how people are treated. Why does Redress think that people like me who were born in mother and baby homes wouldn't have health insurance?
Yeah.
Why do they think that? They're assuming. And we all know what assuming does for anyone. It makes an ass of you and me.
Yeah.
I'm able to keep myself.
Yeah.
I worked hard to educate myself, to keep myself, and to pay taxes in this country. I am so sickened by the government. I am so sickened by Micheál Martin and his mealy-mouthed apology, blaming the families.
But he said he didn't. But the criticism that still exists, Serena, and we heard it so strongly when it happened. We heard it so strongly when the actual scheme was announced. And we're now hearing it again today, one in the context of the apology that's going to be given tomorrow to the Stardust families, and also the fact that the redress scheme is being advertised at the moment, but there are terms and conditions. Serena, thank you so much for your strong, strong voice. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mary Smith. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What's the redress scheme that's currently being...
First of all, I want to say one thing. I want to talk about my mother first, because I never saw my mother. My mother was taken off me because she was pregnant of me by a priest, and she was locked up and left to die. Yeah. Her name was Eileen Smith.
Okay.
And I was in three industrial schools and the Magdalen Laundries. And there was no record, Joe, for me for the first 3 years of my life.
God.
No record until I was ready for work in Clonakilty Industrial School. And what I want to say, Joe, is all the money will not compensate you, no matter what.
Yeah.
I was the one, Joe, that started the Magdalen Laundries. I was the one that campaigned.
I know that.
Through. And on top of that, no money will compensate you.
Yeah.
As the song goes, money can buy you love. I never saw
and Mary,
the face
did,
of my mother.
Did the state apology make a difference?
Not particularly, because sorry is only just a word, Joe. It goes away. But we have only one light shot at this world. We'll not get a second chance.
Yeah.
And it's not a rehearsal. I never seen the face of your mother. And I was lashed and beaten in Clonakilty Industrial School. And then the Maglam launches, because I was going with a boy in case I got pregnant. And I went up to him in 2004. I was getting married.
Yeah.
And to do that to anybody, and I thought and stated, no mother would compensate it, because you've only one mother and one life. And it was not rehearsed. And I feel sorry for them people and the stardust.
Okay.
What happens then as well.
Sad.
I can't know what their families, what happened to their families.
Okay.
But I'm saying sorry to them as well, because I know how much they suffered. Because it'll never, never go away.
Okay.
But acknowledgement, yes. But once acknowledgement, but there's no account for it.
Okay, the line is not great. But Mary, and I know you, and I know your voice, and people know your voice. You've one voice, but you've one of the most, like, along with Miriam and Alice and Serena and Gabrielle and Vanola and Paul today. Such a powerful voice. Never let your voice be stilled, Mary Smith. Rose, I'll go to Rose quickly before the end. Rose, good afternoon.
Hi. What's good afternoon, Joe.
Your situation, Rose.
Well, basically, I was born in Bessborough Mother and Baby Home.
Wow.
And I was 2 years old when I was handed over to a couple that eventually adopted me.
Okay.
And they were both in their 60s.
Right.
And naturally, I had no love. I was just given to them, I'd say. They wanted someone to look after them in their old age. And they got it maybe from Bessborough. And I just had a lonely, empty, miserable childhood, basically.
Yeah.
I did eventually trace my biological family. And that's another story. But the point was I want to make is that no compensation, Joe, or no redress will take away the loss and the empty feeling of never belonging to anybody. Always on the outside, looking in, and never, ever feeling that you belong to this family or that family. Never being acknowledged as a family member. That's what killed me. That's what broke my heart. You know, that just... I look at my grandchildren and I see the love and the care they get from their parents, from me.
And the granny, and the granny.
And And I just think, oh my God, like, what did I really miss out on? I missed out on so much. And just the mention of an enhanced medical card, to me, Joe, it's just another form of identifying us as different.
Okay.
Even my birth certificate, on the top of it, it says from the Register of Adopted Children.
Oh.
So you have no privacy.
Okay.
Everybody knows you have to hand your birth certificate for whether it's a passport, whatever it might be, and you're immediately identified as being different.
Okay.
I found that so difficult to deal with.
I leave it at that, Rose. Again,
I know,
your powerful, powerful voice you have. Powerful voice.
No, well, thanks,
and
Joe,
those
thanks.
Grandchildren are gifted.
Oh, I love
Gifted with Nana Rose. Gifted with Nana Rose. God bless you, Rose. Thank you so much. Harry Buckles was in sound. Broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin. Richard Byrne, researcher, producer Owen McLaughlin. Ray Darcy next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.